This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's Thursday episode. We're going to talk all about training and actually one of my favorite topics because I'm good at it. We're going to be talking about row, bike, and ski on the Concept 2 equipment. So that's the rowing machine, the bike erg, and the ski erg. We're going to talk about how you can improve at all these and address some different aspects of the exercises, the machines that maybe you hadn't thought of before to hopefully get you better at them. Now, before we jump into this episode, of course, one of the best things that we like to integrate all of our training with is whoop data. In order to get whoop data, you have to have a whoop strap. Whoop strap never comes off. That's why it's 24/7, 365 on our wrists or ankle or bicep, wherever you need to put it to get data. And yeah, it's constantly gathering recovery, strain, sleep. We're even looking at our insights on the computer now, so we get more detailed analysis and know exactly every behavior that we do, what effect that has long-term and even medium and short-term as well. So for example, I know now with my whoop data, when I consume magnesium at night, I get an 8% increase in my deep sleep and a 4% increase in my REM sleep. So I know it is a positive behavior for my sleep. These are things that you can start to discover about yourself, things that you can integrate into your training so that ultimately you make more progress in your training, you recover better, and you live with more energy and you live healthier. So you guys can get our discount at themindmuscleproject.com/whoop. So join the whoop team. Raph and I are on the Mind Muscle Project leaderboard. Make sure you join that. If you haven't joined that and you are using whoop, make sure you send us a DM at the on our Instagram, the Mind Muscle Project, and we will send you a code. And with that code, you can join the team. They've got beasts on there like Andrew Papp as well. Also, another professional athlete, my brother. You can verse him on there as well. And there's actually some seriously savage My Muscle Project listeners on there as well that put up some ridiculous, ridiculous strain scores. And then, of course, guys, you know, we need tech to run our gym efficiently, to program efficiently. And one of the best ways we do that is through True Coach. So you may have heard of a company called Trainerize. True Coach doing much better and Trainerize. And a lot of people have now started that have a more personalized approach to training and coaching and running their gym, have started jumping on True Coach and using it as the main programming software for their gym. It's really easy to duplicate programs, to take sections of programs that you've written for individuals in the past and turn them into templates, share them amongst other coaches within the app as well. So you guys can all benefit off each other. And any program that gets written once can be used by any coach at any point and really easily. That's the point, right? It's efficiency here. It's copy and paste. It's getting rid of the spreadsheets. It's making things not only a great experience for you putting the programs in, but also for the people using the programs. You've got videos, you've got messaging. It's all built into the app. So if you guys are interested in jumping on board, we've got a free trial. We've got a discount code as well. If you go to themindmuscleproject.com/truecoach, one word, True Coach, you'll get that deal in there. So make sure you check it out. And then finally, for the month of February, guys, Project Strong is 30% off. So until the end of Feb, you can use the code STRONG30. That's STRONG30, one word, for 30% off when you head to themindmuscleproject.com/strong. So it's always really easy to remember. It's our website /strong. And then for the sponsors, it's /whoop and then /truecoach to get those offers. All right. Where do you want to start with this one?
Man, how long have you been doing the row, bike, and ski for?
Ooh, good question. Rowing machine was definitely my first erg that I got onto. And I started erging. I remember there was one rowing machine in Fitness First. I used to drink so much pre-workout when I was like 16, 17, that before I could actually start training, I used to warm up on the rowing machine. I used to put on 10. I used to do 1 minute as hard as I could. That was my warm-up.
Wait, when you don't use the machines, I always see people that use them for more. They do such short amounts of time. They're like, oh, you know, I jump on every day. I do like 30, 40 seconds on the machine. I'm like, now that's not doing very much.
Now, the ultimate noob move is just straight to 10. Yeah. Damper straight to 10.
I only go heavy. man, I used to actually, during rowing, I guess.
This row.
Concept 2 is the original. Like, the ski erg and the bike erg are like brand new. The row has been around forever. It's the main one they've got. Must be like 99% of their sales. And man, I started that, I guess, when I was 13.
Mm. But you did rowing like for school.
Man, I'll tell you how my most horrific experience was. I was getting ready for this first rowing tryouts. I was obviously trialing out to be the coxswain, so it's like the steer of the boat. And what I'd heard is just like whoever is the lightest, they'll pick. So in the weeks leading up to this, I was dieting, right? Dieting hard. And I was down, man. I was like 29, 28 kilos, Jesus. Right? I was like properly dying. So I would like basically belly eat all day and then I would go and run with my mom at night. It was like pretty tough, right? Like if you're like tired and starving. And then on the...
Before you finish, how heavy were the guys in the boat?
Oh, it was year seven. So probably like 50 kilos.
Okay.
50 to 60 kilos.
Okay.
Well, I guess double my size. But yeah, I guess a normal year... Like they were tall, big boys.
But not 95 kilo, 100 kilo.
They're 13
guys.
Year olds.
Yeah.
13, it was 13 turning 14. So I was preparing for it. On the day of the event, I like didn't eat or drink, right? I was just like, nah, got to be as light as possible. I stepped on the scales. I think I had laxative as well. I like really got down.
Stupid.
And you know, I was take sport quite seriously. So I think I weighed in like 27 kilos. Jesus. And they're like, bro, like you've won. Like no one's lighter than you, you idiot.
You're a dumbbell snatch for 50
and
reps.
The coaches were like, you realize like you were already the lightest kid. Like it was pretty unnecessary. Anyway, I'm like nearly dead coming off this scale. I'm like getting ready for your... And then I'm like, oh, but you know, we don't know if you're going to be the steerer of the boat or the rower yet. So you got to do the 2K trial.
Wait, what do you mean the steerer or the rower?
So I was obviously trying out to be the steerer of the boat, right?
Yeah.
The coxswain.
Yeah.
But they're like, look, you know, we haven't actually started yet. So everyone's still got to do the rowing tryouts.
Oh, really? So the rowing, the coxswain?
Yeah. Well, they hadn't picked the coxswain yet in theory. Right. It was like pretty obvious what I was going to be, but yeah. It was the first day.
Okay.
We hadn't even been to the boat yet.
Okay.
Right. This is just in the school gym. So they're like, you got to do the 2K trial.
Oh, no.
I was like, I'm so weak, I can barely stand. And I weigh like 28 kilos, I can barely pull that oar. Make me do the 2K. Anyway, so
on
like,
the machine?
On the machine. So they're, oh yeah, yeah, of course on the machine.
What was your time? Do you remember your time?
Yeah, I do remember. They capped me at 12. I was still going. And it was horrific.
12, were you dead?
I was sick.
On one?
I was dying. I remember he told me, I was like, why? I went downstairs, I got some bread out of my bag. I was trying to eat it because I was like, I haven't eaten for so long.
I'm just trying to think, bro. So you were slower than 3 minute 500s.
Oh, dude, so, easily. I remember like I started like 2:30, 2:40, and then I died, and it was like 3-4 minutes.
I don't think I've ever seen the rowing machine at 3.
No, in those early days, I was regularly at 3. Under 3, I was pushing.
Yeah, because you would have had such a short stroke because you were so short.
So small. I remember if I was 2, I was like, I'm going hard. So yeah, I remember it was 12 minutes, man. And the coach was like, "Get off!"
Oh man, that's crazy. And then what? So of those kids, what would have been like the fastest time?
So year seven, like no one was breaking seven. So year seven, everyone was get like 7:15.
Seven's a minute 45.
Minute 45. So 7:15, 7:20 was like the best times.
So just
then,
under 2 minutes.
Yeah, by 15:16, everybody would get under 7.
Yeah.
And then by 12, it was like 6:20 to 6:30.
Wow.
That's what happens basically between 12 and 18 if you do rowing.
Yeah. And then now our all-time PBs, are they relevant for this show?
Yeah, I mean the bike and the skate don't really have PBs.
Yeah, me neither.
But on this,
we'll go 500, we'll go 1K and 2K, because I don't think anyone's done really 5 and 10Ks listening to this.
I don't really know them, but I know for the 2K, because we used to always do it on training plan, I think 6:54 was my best one.
Yeah, I remember pushing you through that.
Was that
one? No, I was there when you first cracked 7.
First crack 7. Yeah. It was like 6:58.
Yeah.
So I think my best one on the roll was 6:54. I think on the ski erg, it was like just 200 calories for the 10-minute test.
Okay.
And I've never got 200 calories on the 20-minute test on the air bike. So I'm not sure what I am on
but
the,
we're talking about
the Concept 2 bike.
Yeah, we're talking about the bike. It's very different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. My only experience, I remember the first time I did the Concept 2 bike was when we went to visit Training Think Tank.
Right.
And I just remember this. We had like traveled, done like nothing. And then they're like, oh, this is what Noah Olsen got in the 5K. We're all going to try it now. And then we got on and did a 5K Concept 2 for our first time.
Yeah. I remember the only time I beat Noah Olsen in a workout was rowing and double unders. Do you remember that workout?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it was like a Training Think Tank workout, internal games day thing, because I was getting programmed from them across the world. They sent it to us. And I remember my coach goes, this is Noah's time. Make sure you beat him. And I think I beat him by like 4 seconds or something. And that was like my proudest moment ever. But he was probably, that was his sixth workout probably in like a 12-day training program. But anyway, we're off track. So I think my best time for the 2K was 6:30 or 6:29.9, I think, just under 6:30. That was absolutely awful and I've never done it since because I do not want to beat that. And then I've done a 1K. I think I got 3:05, I want to say, just over 3 minutes. I wanted under 3 minutes. But I couldn't get there. It's awful. Also awful. 2K is worse. But the feeling afterwards in the 1 and the 2K, I think equally as bad. It's just, obviously just not on it as longer. So you don't have to be as impatient. As patient. And then the 500, I think my best 500 is like 120. I think. But I think I would go faster now because I'm a bit heavier and I'm a bit stronger. And I don't need as much fitness. But Those are sort of the rough times we're working with. So anyway, to come back to the main thing that we need to talk about here is just as an overall sense of where we should start this in terms of improving these exercises is thinking about time domains. Now, usually when we've just talked about what we just talked about with the tests, we talked about the 500, the 1K, and the 2K tests. Now, usually if your exposure to rowing, your exposure to ski and bike is in workouts, you're probably never on it for more than, what, 2 minutes? You know, you're somewhere between 1 to 2 minutes, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. If it's a buy-in, maybe up to 5 minutes, but seriously unlikely because in a class, if you're using up 5 minutes of a 15-minute workout on one machine in one go, there's not going to be much else to do in the workout. So what that means is, as we get in fitness advice before, is the time domains you're not doing is usually where you can make up the most ground. And it's where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck in terms of your fitness. So one of the best improvements that I started to make in my rowing was when Training Think Tank, Training Plan started programming 30 minutes max distance or 30 minutes, I think that would just say hold the best average score that you can for 30 minutes, the best average pace. And so, you know, you sit on a row for 30 minutes and you row as hard as you can. It's a very different pace, a very different feeling, a very different mental state than doing it for 7 minutes, for 10 minutes. So I learned a lot about that there. And you build a different kind of fitness when you're going that long on the row as well. It's a very different, it's very, very, very different to what you've done before.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So I'd already done that quite a lot doing rowing, but that's how you get better at rowing is you do it for a long period of time. It's just, yeah, it's because you spend so much more time. So obviously, you build muscle endurance specifically in the areas you need to build it. You'll find that it naturally improves your technique as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you go longer, because if you're doing some stupid thing, like your arms are always bent, like you just notice that after 25 minutes. So there's a natural efficiency. It's not going to fix all technique, but there's a natural efficiency that you start to learn. You tend to start to learn how to, you know, lower your stroke rate, but increase your power. Those things tend to come with it. And there's just, you just get better at it for being longer. So I really encourage you, if you want to get better at it, there's a certain amount of time you need to spend on the machines.
Yep. And then I think the opposite is true as well. The opposite end of the spectrum is true. And that is sprints. Like most of the time that you do this, you're hitting the middle zone. And in the middle zone, I feel like you don't really make much progress. You just hurt really bad. But if you do short sprints, somewhere between 10 to 15 seconds, you also learn how to get that fan going, how to drive with the right muscles, and then how to increase your stroke rate really quickly. One thing I notice on the ski ergs especially is people don't know how to generate power properly through the stroke. They find it awkward, and we'll talk about this in a sec, how to use the force curve correctly. Like, where do I pull? Where do I start? You know, some people finish all with their arms. Some people end up in the bottom of the squat. Some people do it all from a hinge. They don't really know where they're supposed to drive and get power from. But what sprinting will teach you to do is like, oh, okay, this is where I can generate the most force. When you're trying to get that number as low as possible, I find for a lot of people, especially the skier, their technique gets better. It's not always the case for the rower as well. I'd say, if anything, it could get worse. But it's, for the ski erg, one thing I've noticed, bike erg, the technique's pretty straightforward. But ski erg, I've definitely noticed if I'm like, hey, go as fast as you can on this, they'll naturally find the most powerful position for the ski erg.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think 90% of people spend way too much time just in the middle. And that's what my coach used to be like, dude, you're always doing like the same pace, which was true. Like, generally, everyone just does the same pace.
Yeah.
And they might be like a little bit, oh, I'm dying, I'm a bit slower, or I'm like, I'm feeling good, I'm a little bit faster, but it's so similar.
Yeah.
And really, you should be using like a huge variation. So if you're on the ski erg and you always look at the calories per hour, like sometimes you should be at 500, 600 because you're cruising for a long period of time. Sometimes you need to be like over 2,000 because you're really hummering. And you see most people are always 1,000, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really why you don't improve.
Yeah.
And that goes for the rower. The rower is a tough one. The rower is a little harder because it's got that the way back. You need to know how to sprint. So I would recommend sprinting once you get the technique pretty well down. Bike, you can usually go at it first day.
Yeah.
But same thing on the bike. Like, it depends what you're missing. For me, when I started doing sprints on the bike, you know, my 10-minute test improved enormously because I just learned how to put out power on the bike, and all of a sudden it felt easier maintaining it. So it's not going to be for everyone, but yeah, really spending time on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Most people don't, because if you're going slow, it's super boring. And if you're going fast, it really hurts really quickly.
Yeah.
So everybody avoids it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, on this next point, technique, I don't want to talk about technique because it's a hard thing to talk about. It's easier to show to coach someone through it. But what I will say for people to think about next time they're on the rowing machine or they're on one of these ergs is find the point during the stroke at which you can relax the most. I think that's probably the thing I notice people lose a lot of efficiency in is the, I don't know, they call it the downstroke.
The recovery.
The recovery stroke. So obviously when you're returning the handles to the top of the ski erg, there's not really a recovery stroke on the bike. So you'd be talking about just like keeping your upper body relaxed. But yeah, when you're in the roller, that obviously when you're rolling the chain back into the fan, that recovery stroke is people stay tense during that, or they pull themselves in. They don't allow the machine to do the work for them. They push their arms back. They pull themselves in with their feet. It's like, no, you can just slowly glide in. Have you ever seen that roller seat? The reason the roller seat slides to the end is because you're supposed to be letting that thing do the work for you. That's why the chain pulls the arm back in, because it's doing the work for you. So same with the handles on the ski erg, just let those handles pull your arms back up to the top. Stay nice and efficient there. And that's, I think, really where so many people, because they're just thinking about that next stroke, they forget to stay relaxed during the whole thing. And the whole thing becomes just this ball of tension. That 360 tension will wear you out a lot faster.
Yeah, and just I would just set up your phone once and just film yourself once doing the exercises.
Mm.
Like one workout. Just keep the camera on you for the whole time and you could be surprised what you see.
Yeah. That's probably the one thing that people, because I'll do these group sessions and I'll jump in the workout, and a lot of the clients and the members, they'll look at me and they'll say, you know, it's so funny when I watch you run, you're going so much faster than everyone else, but you look the most calm and most relaxed. And I'm like, well, it's just because I know how to be efficient. I know when I need to be tense and hard and fire, and I know when to relax in. And the more time you can spend relaxing and the less time you can spend tense and putting out power, just the more efficient you'll be. Whereas someone else is versus me, they're driving themselves hard out fast on the roll, and they're driving themselves in hard as well. But that will wear them out a lot quicker. So just learning things like that over time can dramatically improve your efficiencies on these machines. So that's the one thing. Outside of that, I would just start YouTubing some techniques, some really good technique videos out there on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that'll teach you tons of stuff. And obviously, you've got the visual element of it as well. I think we did a video. Connor, did we do a video on rowing technique? Okay, yeah, we've got a video on rowing. I don't know if it's out on our Instagram, but you can probably check that out there as well. Okay, so this actually matters quite a bit, and it also matters if your equipment is quite old, but cleaning your equipment, looking after the quality of the chain, getting the dust out of the fan, making sure you got new cords and that sort of thing on your ergs, just keeping regular maintenance on your machines, absolutely essential to hitting good times. You were probably the one that was most adamant about this, is because you must have, obviously, you can probably recall your experiences for us on how often you would clean and oil the rowers.
Right before the open. That's when we do it.
Yeah, right before the open. But when you were rowing for school, you did it more regularly.
Yeah, like every month.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of people listening to this and didn't even know you could clean your... They probably threw the oil out when they came in the box.
You should oil the chain, clean it out, and your times always go faster.
Yeah. Keeping that machine clean and efficient, obviously, besides improving the life of your equipment, makes you go faster. Means you're not rowing slower times all the time. You actually get a good idea. It's like when you get that new rower and you get on it, you're like, whoa, so easy. It's just because it's clean.
Yeah.
That's all it is. So just make sure that roll is clean. I think you can get Concept 2 service them or whatever, but get that stuff serviced regularly, especially with people sweating in it all the time and it's getting gross. And yeah, you've got a lot of dust in your gym. That adds up very quickly. So definitely check that out. Other component of this as well would be, going into what's on the screen, which we're going to talk about in a second, is before you even look at what's on the screen, is your damper. Now, I'll let you explain damper for the rower and the ski and stuff, because I learned it off of you.
So damper is just the resistance that you're pulling back against on the flywheel, right? So if you were to think about, if you're a rower, you would generally always have it at like 5 to 6. That is, depending on the state of your machine, that's like what the water is meant to be like, right?
Okay. So the same resistance of the water.
Yeah, so that's essentially the middle ground. Obviously, it can depend on currents, but that is generally what it's meant to be. So if you're just like, hey, I'm just generally going for a rower, that middle ground is, and you're a normal size person, that middle ground is where it's meant to be. Now, if you go, people are like, oh, the 10 is the easiest or the 1 is, it's not really like that. Obviously, pulling on the chain is going to be easiest when it's 1, but you get the least back from it. So you're going to have to stroke very frequently. The 10 is going to be the reverse of it. So it's going to be a very hard pull, but you're going to get a lot out of that pull, a lot of purchase out of the pull. So your power will go up and your distance will go up, but obviously it takes the most out of you so you can stroke at a lower rate. So it really just depends on what sort of workout you're doing, how your body's feeling as well, depending on what damper you're going to do.
So would you change the damper setting between a 500 and a 1K test?
Oh, very slightly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But not hugely.
Not hugely.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're going for a sprint, you're going to crank the damper up. Depends how big you are. If you're very weak, it's just never a good idea.
Yeah.
Because you just suck at it. But if you're strong, yeah, you definitely crank the damper up. And then as you go longer and longer, you want to bring it down. The truth is, particularly for the rower, is you almost never really want the damper at a really low setting.
Yeah.
Unless you're just intentionally trying to recover.
Right.
So like a recovery workout is really good to put it on one or two. Okay. It's light resistance. But if you're trying to like win a race,
yeah,
it's almost never useful to go below 4 or 5.
So if you're heavier and bigger, would you go on a slightly higher damper?
Yeah.
Okay. And then if your machine is older and more dusty, are you going on a lower damper or a higher damper?
You generally have to go on a higher damper.
If your machine is lower and rusty. Okay. Yeah. So if your machine's a little bit older, put the damper up a little bit more.
Try and get a bit more out of it.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. Good stuff. And I definitely think that girls will row at a slightly lower damper than a guy, like 1 point, right?
Yeah.
So if one a guy's on a 5 or a 6, girls maybe on a 5 or a 4. Yeah. Awesome. So that's your damp setting. And in what occasion would you ever put it on a 10? I don't think I've ever seen
sprints.
You put it on a 10.
Sprints.
Okay.
Sprints if you're strong.
Yeah.
So for like ski, I don't think I'm ever that strong that it's necessary.
Yeah.
But yeah, 20 second sprint on a Concept 2, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. Okay. So next thing to consider is the screen. Okay. These things that are on the screen, they tell us a lot of information, a lot of useful information. And so the first one we'll go through is obviously the pace and the timing. So that number over divided by 500. I know it's divided by a kilometer on the bike erg. And then obviously if you're stroking for calories, it's a different number. It's calories per hour. But I think the most telling thing or the most important thing about pacing, obviously besides all the obvious stuff and telling you where you're at and how much you're improving and all this sort of stuff, is what I find is how well someone can maintain their pace. And so that's when I use it a lot for other people, is once I got the technique down, I'll say, okay, let's hold 150 right now over 500 for 20 strokes. And I'll let them count the strokes. And I think what that is teaching them is consistency. I think that's ultimately what all good things come down to, is consistently good reps. And when someone is, when I see their speed jumping around all the time, 2 or 3 seconds here, 2 or 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, it's just someone who's erratic.
That's just amateur.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amateur.
Yeah. And so that's really how you, besides obviously getting faster, a really good indicator that people don't consider is how consistently can I stay on one number? I mean, go on a rowing machine, try and stay at 150, for example, and try and hold it for 50 strokes.
You really want to be able to stay, because if you let it drop off, then you have to accelerate to get back to it. So that accelerating is always the most tiring on the machine. So I like, if someone's like, get going, it's like really tough, right? Every time it stops. That's why if you're doing a partner workout, it's easy to jump on because the flywheel is already spinning.
Right.
So the last thing you want to be doing is accelerating.
Yeah.
So that's why like people that are good at the machines, they can just hit it on the ticket where they would need to be and they never move.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great skill and it's definitely an indicator of someone that's getting better. Okay. So outside of the timing, the pacing is the stroke rate. Now, one of the big misconceptions about stroke rate that I've noticed, and one of the things, honestly, I was just learning off YouTube, is that the stroke rate for the ski erg needs to be quite high. Mm. So really good technique, they say, or for common ski erg technique, somewhere between like 38 to like 60 strokes a minute. But most people, when you look at them on the ski erg, they're stroking the same pace that they're stroking on the roller. So they're stroking high 20s, low 30s. And this guy in the video was saying that's just not how ski erg, you're not supposed to ski erg.
It's just different to the row.
Yeah. So the times, and obviously the times are obvious one, but the stroke rate is a big one, the difference between the ski erg and the rower.
Huge difference.
So that's definitely one thing to consider. If you're stroking at the same speed on the rower and the ski erg, you need to increase the speed of your ski erg. So try and stay around something around 40 strokes per minute. And that's roughly where you should get used to for the ski erg.
Yeah, and then the rower is the reverse, and most people stroke too fast.
Yes.
If you're just amateur, you get on the rower, you're almost always stroking too fast. So you want to be down towards the low 20s for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we used to do CrossFit training or even rowing training, often it would be, hey, do your best 5K, don't stroke over more than 18 strokes per minute, which feels really slow at the start, but it's a really good exercise. What you'll find is that you get good at it, you're at like 80, 90% of your best score, but you're stroking very slowly. And the reason is, if you look at two people in a rowing race and they're the same, that, you know, they're equal points in the race, they're neck and neck. If you just look at whoever's stroking the slowest, usually you can predict the winner.
Is slower going to be the winner?
They're going to be the winner. Yeah.
Right.
Because they're going the same speed with less strokes over the race. So they're going to fatigue more slowly.
Yeah.
Because they're doing less strokes. They're spending more time just chilling.
Yeah, yeah.
Compared to the other person. So it's almost 100% the start of the race. Oh, they're stroking slower. They're going to win.
Yeah.
So you want to generally on the rower get better at stroking less often. You got to remember, you are flying when you're not stroking.
Yeah.
So when you're sliding down, chilling on the recovery, like you are moving and you're cranking up meters. So you want to be chewing up that time, not rushing into the next stroke. So I would focus on longer strokes, bringing that down. If you're always in the 30s, like you're stroking too fast unless you're sprinting.
Yeah. I think the best way to think about it is just think about you are on the water.
Yeah.
You know, think about rowing on the water. These guys are not stroking 30 strokes. It's too erratic. Imagine trying to be in sync for 30 strokes a minute.
Particularly if you're cruising, you know.
Yeah. I mean, just go watch a video of rowing races if you haven't seen them in the Olympics or whatever. And you just see, just imagine yourself, you're out on the water, bang, big stroke. Okay, recovery, oars coming out of the water. It's dripping across as the boat is sliding through the open water. Bang, oar goes in again, and you hit another stroke. Everyone's sliding back in sync. It's not this erratic in and out, in and out.
So it's basically half as many strokes as the ski.
Yeah, yeah, essentially, yes. Okay, cool. So next thing to think about on the screen is the force curve. Now, this is just...
I think it's only for the rower.
Okay, it's not for the ski?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I think it should be on the ski.
I've never used it.
But anyway, it's a useful tool when you're starting out to learn technique. You need to go look at force curves and how they look or what the ideal force curve looks. But essentially, if you were to, I guess, think about... It's hard to describe, but think about a graph. You know, that curve, most of the power of that curve happens at the start and then you get this smooth drop-off towards the end. So if your main peak of your force curve is in the middle or at the end of the stroke, you're doing it wrong. That huge drive at the start is really where you get that. You get the drive, the fan gets moving, you're compressed, you've got your legs, you're driving, and then really just the back end of it is just you just finishing it off with your arms. So if what you notice is there's no force at the start and then it's just like heaps of force at the end, the timing of your stroke is all out. That first part of the stroke, when you're compressed in the bottom of that, I guess, that squatting, almost squatting-like position, and you drive out, that's where most of your power comes from, and the rest is basically a recovery or just momentum as the wheel's moving.
Yeah, nearly anyone, if you get analyzed by a coach, they need you to push harder at the start, so that's because your legs.
Yeah.
Your legs are much stronger than your arms at the end.
Yeah.
So most people drive way too weak with their legs and way too hard with their arms.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's happening a little bit with the ski erg as well, is that some people, they start really soft and they try and sit down into it hard with their legs at the bottom or finish off too hard with their arms. But the majority of turning of the wheel happens at the start. It's the closing of the elbow down to the hip. And that is like your lat. That's your main mover. That's really firing that flywheel. And then you're just kind of finishing off a little bit.
Because you got to remember, because it's a spin wheel. So most of the resistance that you get back from it is at the start.
Yeah.
At the end of the stroke, it's already spinning.
Yeah.
So the resistance pulling back on against you on the handles is much less.
Yeah.
So that's why you get way more out of the start of the stroke than the end of the stroke.
How much have you, since we got the ski ergs, have you seen your skiing improve a lot over time?
Yeah, huge. At the start, it sucked. And I was making all the errors we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Way too soft on the catch. The strokes, same as the rower, strokes always too short.
Yeah.
People don't open up on the ski. I'm already short, so you need to get everything you can out of the stroke.
Stand all the way up.
And then stroking too slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely some big things to fix. Okay. So next factors involved, we touched on it a little bit, but is the strength and size. People that are bigger, taller, and heavier will always be better on these machines. Unfortunately, it's just a fact. Mm. So it's a massive thing to... So it's hard to then compare... Like, it would be wrong for Raf to compare his times to me all the time. It's better to compare his scores to someone that's a similar size, which is why in the indoor rowing championships, and I guess in the boat as well, you've got weight categories, you've got weight limits and that sort of stuff because of the advantage that you get.
No, well, in the boat you don't because you have to move your body weight.
Oh, okay.
So there's some relative problem with the
machine. I thought there was a weight cap to the boat. No. There's not? Oh, okay.
There is, like, just generally, you don't want like some obese guy in the boat.
Yeah.
And you also generally don't want a midget. You don't want a midget, but you want you want a lean, tall guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In terms of the archetype body type, you're tall and you're muscular and lean. Like, if you look at the rowers, like, they're tall dudes and they're quite muscular. So, yeah, comparing yourself to one of those guys, they're always naturally going to be better, right? Yeah. So, it's just one of those things. So
I think if across the three, the bike, it matters the least. From what I've seen, the concept too, height and even weight matters the least.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And then I guess really the other thing is strength. You know, if you're a really strong person, you're going to just benefit because like we talked about with the resistance is just going to be weaker to you. If you've got a really heavy, strong deadlift, you know, that pull is light.
It makes a huge difference.
You know what I mean? You're just used to pulling heavy weight.
It's totally different to running.
Yeah.
Running is really about cardio. There is a huge strength component on these machines. Yes. Why you get some runners like, bro, I've done like 10 marathons. Like, cool, have fun.
Yeah.
You're gonna hurt really bad.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a muscular factor and strength factor, and there's an aerobic factor. There's a conditioning factor to it. So when it comes to skiing, for example, ski erg, you know, someone with huge lats, huge wings, like swimmers, really good on the ski erg, right?
Yeah.
Because they're so used to that movement and they're so strong in that movement. Someone that's a gymnast that's really good at pull-ups, really strong through their triceps, they're going to be really good at the ski erg. They just have that strength there.
And you got to think about, you know, what's going to be the right exercise. So something said like a lunge is always going to be more appropriate for the bike than a squat. You're going to have a bigger carryover, right? If you've got a really good lunging strength.
Yeah.
But that matters a lot. If you want to get better at machines, increasing your strength in the most similar movement is a guaranteed carryover.
Definitely. Okay, and then final thing to consider here is just programming. I think you just need good programming to get better at these exercises. If you're not programming them correctly, then like Raf said, you end up holding the same pace the whole time just across different time domains.
You just plateau. You just become the same every time you do it. It's always the same. Always hurts. You get the same score.
And you're never going to force yourself to do 5 kilometer intervals, 2 kilometer, 3 kilometer intervals.
The only way to go above amateur is to be like, all right, this is the score I got 5 weeks ago. We're progressing.
So when you were rowing at school, what was the program? How many days a week were you training?
Well, rowing would be, you know, twice a day, 5-6 days a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're rowing a lot. So that's the amount you need to get.
And
really,
there'd be conditioning, you know, obviously on top of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'd be doing a rowing either in a boat or on the machine.
Conditioning on top of that.
Yeah, like the gym and stair runs.
Right.
And everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck.
But the actual rowing in the either machine or on the water was
20 hours. Possibly.
Yeah, it would be like, I guess 7 sessions a week.
Yeah,
but often, you know, they could be 2 hours. So it's a lot in that. You're not saying you have to do that, definitely, but you definitely still need a well thought out program. What I would do is, I would just choose one of the machines and do a program for that machine. That works really well because you finally hit it with enough frequency. If you try and write yourself a program of like bike, ski, and row, you end up doing them like once a week.
Yeah.
You just don't get that much better. But if you can put a block where you bike 3+ times a week, you'll really get better at it.
Right. Yeah. All good advice. Okay. So there it is. Guys, we'll go through it again really quickly. So to get better at your row, bike, and ski on the concept two, you got to consider time domains, your technique and efficiencies, cleaning the equipment, your damper setting. Then on the screen, you've got your pacing and timing, your stroke rate, your force curve. And then as well, obviously, strength and size are a huge factor when it comes to getting good times on these machines or just comparing times, really. And then programming. Make sure you put it all together. We have put a lot of it together, not all of it, but we do have a lot of programming in our Project Fitness program. So if you are interested in getting fitter, if that is your main focus, but you want something interesting, you want something fun, you want something exciting, not boring, but is mixing in a lot of our knowledge around this sort of stuff, you can go to themindmuscleproject.com/fitness and you will find the discount. Oh, sorry, no discount. You'll find the program on there, the 8-week program, and you get that. It'll be a discount next month. So themindmuscleproject.com/fitness. You can check it out there. All right, guys, thank you so much, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.